The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station, JVC Broadcasting Management, or its sponsors.
Welcome to Crime and Justice Radio, where we talk all things crime, justice, mayhem, and the courts with expert insiders and legal outcasts. My name is Aida Leisenring, and I'm here with Bruce Barquette.
Good evening, Aida.
Good evening, Bruce.
Interesting show we're going to have tonight.
It's just us.
Well, don't say just us. We're the stars of the show, so to speak.
Sure. You can interview me about all my differing views on current crime stats and what's going on.
No. We're going to go through, obviously, we're going to talk about the shooting in Buffalo. We're going to talk about some work, our life, to some extent, as criminal defense attorneys. We're going to talk about gun rights and several other things. And on the show, and we do this from time to time, we don't have guests, so we can chat some. And I want to invite callers to give us a ring if you'd like to. Listeners can call at 631-451-1039. It's 631-451-1039. Feel free to call and offer your thoughts on any of the topics that we are covering. But I guess we have to start off with...
Well, before we go into it, we're going to do kind of a deep dive on the Buffalo shooter, who he is, and how this might have been prevented. I do want to say, because we mentioned it last week, Vicky White, who was a big-time CO, was it in Alabama, broke out of prison. Her lover, who was not only convicted of kidnapping and attempted murder, but also facing new charges and facing the death penalty. So they were on the run for a while, but it's really hard to hide in this new world that we live in with surveillance cameras and intelligence and face recognition and social media and, you know.
No, they got found. She killed herself and right. He's back in custody.
And now... He's back in custody. He's going to obviously face new charges, but he is, as he was before he broke out, facing the death penalty. And if there's any question now, they're going to seek it for sure. And dare I say, if he gets convicted, I think it was the stabbing murder, like multiple stab wounds, something insane, of this woman, I would not be surprised if they give him the death penalty, because they're going to say this guy can't be monitored in a prison unless it's on death row.
Well, in death penalty litigation, there's something called skipper evidence, which refers to the individual's adjustment to prison life and whether or not he can continue or she can continue to live safely and injure other people.
It's like I adjusted quite well. I formed a relationship. I got out some. I went on vacation.
Had a little two-week meander.
But look, I feel bad for her just for a moment. She had her funeral. Apparently, a lot of people showed up. I'm glad they did. I hope she's not remembered as the sum of her faults. And apparently...
She's going to be remembered for her fault.
Unfortunately, yes. But before that, the people that knew her to be a very, very good correction officer. Very good and a good person. So,
you know what I think of this, right?
We all make mistakes.
No. You know what I think? That we ought not have female guards guarding male inmates and male guards guarding female inmates. It leads to problems.
Right. But that assumes that everybody's the same orientation.
No, it assumes that the vast majority of the people are the same orientation. And this is not the first time this has happened. We talked about it before. I don't want to go off on it because we have other things to talk about tonight.
The Escape from Dannemora woman was recently released after serving, I think, like 7 years.
And the same problem we had there, although she left the guy standing at the exit of the sewer drain that they crawled out of. After they escaped from the prison itself, and it is unfortunate that
listen,
she killed herself, but she was going to spend an awful long time in prison, And that's that. And
maybe
look,
not that
people,
much.
You know, this is a lesson.
Maybe not as much as she would have been led to believe.
Yeah. Well, we have, there's people, and there's life after prison too. Even if you spend several years in prison. And look, we have clients who talk about every once in a while fleeing or running, or well, they won't find me, or they can't. And my line to them is, they found Osama bin Laden. When they're looking for you earnestly, they find everyone. No one escapes and is never caught.
Unless you go to Mexico.
It doesn't matter. They
hang out in Ecuador where they can't extradite you.
They catch everybody. And they extradite.
Not everybody.
The extradition is not what they always do. They kidnap people. We've had clients that have literally been kidnapped from foreign countries and brought here.
That's true.
Gun to the head, handcuffs, thrown in a plane.
Kenya.
And from Kenya, exactly.
El Salvador.
Right.
By the way, life after prison, and not just for exonerees who are vindicated and hopefully come into some serious money that will never, ever put them back to the place where they deserve to be before they were wrongfully in prison. But even people that have committed the crimes, did the time, come out, there is life after prison. Most of these individuals, I think, reunite with their families. Many are married. Many go on to have kids. Many go on to get to know their kids. Many go on to get jobs. And so that moment before they step into prison and think it's over, they can't see. And especially with younger clients, right? They're like, am I going to get out of prison before I'm 40? And I'm like, dude.
There's life after 40.
Yeah. Not that I think all sentences are right, but really, you know, as you are an example, there's life after many years.
Uh-huh.
I say that to make myself feel young.
Let's move on, shall we? Again, if people want to give us a call on the Buffalo shooter, dare I say gun safety laws, 631-451-1039, 631-451-1039. So we had an 18-year-old teenager
and just
from Conklin, New York, gathered together a number of weapons and body armor and travel to Buffalo, which is a couple hundred miles, apparently to shoot individuals of color and kill as many as he can. And he satisfied that goal to some extent, unfortunately and tragically, by killing 10 and wounding 3. 11 were black, 2 were white. Used a assault weapon, an AR-15. Had a hunting rifle and I believe a shotgun with him as well.
So there's two things that I find interesting. Number one, whenever anything like this happens, my first instinct is, who is this person? Where does he come from? Who are his parents? How did he live? Were there red flags? Could it have been stopped, right? And the other aspect of this is, and we'll get to in a moment, is the red flag laws that were enacted in 2019. And frankly, I didn't even know about them, Bruce. And if I read the headline, I quickly forgot about it. It seems like there's a law out there that could prevent this very situation, but it's not utilized frequently enough. But anyway, his parents, this kid's parents, he's 18. I don't think he has any kind of a criminal record. He's described, unsurprisingly, as a little socially isolated. And his parents are civil engineers with the State Department of Transportation. He went to high school. He graduated. He, I forget if he spent a semester in college, but he seems to have a history either of mental illness or there were some red flags. So apparently he'd made threats against students in his high school. He went to Susquehannock Valley High School outside of Binghamton, New York. And students were asked for a school project about their plans after graduation, and he said he wanted to commit a murder-suicide. So obviously, law enforcement was briefed on that. He claimed to be joking, but they investigated it, and ultimately, under mental health state law, they were able to have him psychiatrically evaluated, placed into a hospital, but he was released within a couple of days. So he ended up graduating. And when he went to purchase a gun, the gun shop owner, who feels horrified that he was the man that sold the gun to this kid, said that he ran all the appropriate background checks and there were no red flags at all.
Well, yeah, he did. And look, he apparently bought guns in New York. So the report that he had an AR-15 to me is some degree.
He bought another part and did something to the gun, it's alleged.
Well, but look, the way the gun laws work under the SAFE Act in New York is you can't own an assault weapon. And they define assault weapons by characteristics of the gun. One is semi-automatic. In other words, can you pull the trigger over and over again and the gun just keeps automatically putting a round in the chamber without firing a fully automatic weapon? You have to pull the trigger again and again and again, but you can do so quite quickly. You can't have a pistol grip, or you can't have a detachable magazine, and you can't have a forward grip. So these are just weird characteristics, but you can still have what gun owners refer to as an AR-15 platform. So you can have a semi-automatic rifle that fires the same ammunition as an AR-15 and fires it rapidly, but you just don't have a pistol grip, and you can have a detachable magazine. I know somebody owns a gun like that, and in all candor, I own an AR-15 that doesn't have a detachable magazine, has a pistol grip, and I can reload that basically as fast as anybody could reload a gun with a detachable magazine. It's a stupid law.
Did you have to register these guns?
No. To buy rifles in New York State, you simply have to show up, and they do a background check, an instant background check, which is essentially...
You passed?
It's essentially a criminal history background check. So you fill out a questionnaire, you give them your name and identifying information, they do a background check, and you can buy any gun any legal gun that you want. So the AR-15...
So you can do this in Long Island, but what about New York City?
No. Well, New York City, you have to register even rifles.
Into Dick's Sporting Good and can I buy a rifle at Dick's Sporting Good?
Yes, but you have to register through the police department. You can't just in Long Island, where we are now and where I live and for the rest of the state, I just walk in, give them the money, and they give me the gun and I walk out with the ammunition.
And then if you're a total psycho, you can buy other parts on Amazon and create some insane automatic rifle.
You can buy one of the things that New York bans is quote unquote large capacity magazines, which is really a silly thing if you understand how guns work and if you're proficient with a gun. So you can't have a magazine with more than 10 rounds in it. So supposedly you could put a round in the chamber, have a 10-round magazine, so you can fire 11 shots without reloading. But reloading a semi-automatic weapon that has a magazine takes about as much time as it takes me to say reload a weapon with a magazine. Actually, less than that. You drop the magazine, you pop another one in, and you keep shooting. So I guess there's a second or a split-second hesitancy between pulling the trigger as you're firing the weapon. But if you're firing at people that are unarmed, that are fleeing and running and hiding from you, it really doesn't matter at all. And the real piece of equipment that this person had that allowed him to inflict the amount of damage he did was the body armor, because there was an armed guard there, a retired police officer.
He shot at him. He ended up dying. He got shot back. Right.
Oh, he wasn't able, because of the body armor. So he was protecting himself against being shot.
Where do you buy body armor?
That I can't help you with, but apparently it's
from like everything Amazon.
It's available. Got it. And look, it's a horrible tragedy.
That should be a red flag. If my Amazon order history is body armor in it,
It's a horrible tragedy, and it's worse than a tragedy. You have 10 people that lost their lives. The person was doing this based upon some crazy, insane, literally insane, racist theory in his own head. I find it I find two things about the political discussions that go on afterwards to be troubling. One is, and feel free to jump in here.
No, go ahead, Bruce.
One is that somehow we want to blame every Republican for this. And two, the constant beating of the gun control, gun repossession, gun safety laws. Neither of those things, I think, matter.
Hold on a second. I'm pro Second Amendment, and my friends would probably, many of which are angry about my position on that. But I actually like this idea of a red flag law, which we have, and I learned about today when I went on our government website. The red flag law, and I'm quoting them, also known as the Extreme Risk Protection Order Law, is effective in New York starting August 2019. The law prevents individuals who show signs of being a threat to themselves or others from purchasing or possessing any kind of firearm. So it's supposed to provide all necessary procedural safeguards to ensure that no firearm is removed without due process, while ensuring that the tragedies like the school shooting in Parkland, Florida, this is what the New York government website was quoting, are not repeated. So in theory, there's a red flag. A student who's socially isolated, who's been posting creepy, crazy things on social media, and makes a threat to kill students at the school and in turn himself, would, in a perfect world, be placed on this red flag list only for the purpose of, if he walks into a store to buy a gun, he would be stopped, right? And that's a good thing. I mean, on the other hand, I get a stupid kid who's not socially isolated, who's not mentally ill, making a stupid joke about guns and then suddenly landing not appropriately on a red flag list. But if that red flag list is only for the purpose of giving you that red flag if someone's trying to buy a gun, then I don't think it's a bad thing.
Well, I think you're touching on something that you've referred to before, which is the real problem behind some of these crazy crimes.
Mental illness,
exactly.
Pandemic has
upped that significantly.
I mean, suicides are up, violence is up. People are angry, they're divided, they're poor. I don't know what this kid's specific problems are, and we're going to find out because, reasonably speaking, you look at the picture and, you know, obviously anyone can suffer from mental illness. You don't have to have been beaten as a young child or, you know, have bipolar disorder to have that happen to you. But his parents are both employed. They work for the government, grew up middle class. He graduated from high school. You wouldn't see this coming.
Yeah, I don't know if you see it coming or not. Let's be intellectually consistent and honest. We've talked about on this show, and we talk about it with judges when we represent individuals who are teenagers, that their brains do not develop fully as 16, 17, 18, 19-year-olds. They're still teenagers. They still have kind of susceptible to bad judgment because of their immaturity and because of their literally biology. Their brains just don't develop at this completely at that age. So we ask for laws that reduce penalties for teenagers. We ask for leniency from judges when we're representing clients like that. And to be consistent, in my view, selling a firearm to a teenager is a problem. We withhold alcohol until people are 21.
I agree.
We withhold other marijuana, which is legal in New York now. You can't get to your 21. To me, I have teenagers that I'm teaching and are taught how to use firearms and firearm safety. There's no way in God's earth that when my oldest turns 18, I'm going to permit her to purchase a semi-automatic rifle or a shotgun or any kind of gun at all. Just won't be mature enough to do that.
Well, the other issue for me here is he apparently posted a 180-page manifesto online explaining why he committed the shootings and describing his preparations, which were meticulous. And so this was pre-planned. I wonder what other kind of paper trail he left in social media, if this was disseminated right before or not. And you think about the Twitter police out there and the social media police and the algorithms and the giants that be, and how many of these recent shootings have been preceded by
crazy posts,
crazy warnings.
But don't worry, right? Don't worry. Somebody who's offering skepticism about a vaccine,
right,
or whether or not masks actually work,
right, so
their social media is
there.
Been suspended.
There, I gave the Fox News talking point.
Well, but look, that's that, and we'll talk about this a little bit when we come back. But there's a racial aspect to this that I don't think we should completely ignore, because it obviously was his motivation for
100%
doing what he did.
And it's going to affect him on the federal case that I'm sure they'll launch against him.
Yeah, that'll provide the federal authorities with a hate crime and give them the ability to potentially, he's 18 years old, seek the death penalty. We'll be back in a few minutes after a short break with more on Crime and Justice Radio with Aida Leisenring and myself, Bruce Barquette. Again, if you want to give us a call, do so, 631-451-1039. Talk to you in a few minutes.
Welcome back to Crime and Justice Radio. My name is Aida Leisenring, and I'm here with Bruce Barquette. And we have been discussing the Buffalo shooting that occurred this Saturday, where 10 individuals lost their lives at the hands of an 18-year-old kid who wrote an 180-page manifesto online explaining just why he was committing this crime in advance. It was meticulously planned. His name is Peyton Grendon, and he is from New York and traveled 200 miles with a number of weapons and wearing body armor to commit murder. Do we have to say allegedly? He's not our client.
No, we're not in a courtroom. We don't have to say allegedly.
And but these are the allegations, and they arrested him right there. He was about to actually kill himself, and law enforcement talked him out of it, and they were able to put him in custody.
So, but the manifesto that he wrote was objectively and clearly racist. He wanted to kill people of color. Obviously, that's something that all reasonable people, even most unreasonable people, think is abhorrent. It's unbelievable that they would that this would happen in this day and age. You had an interesting observation about why it matters that we have a white person out to kill as many black people as he can, as opposed to a black person out to kill as many white people as they can. And that happened, I think, in Michigan or Wisconsin.
I think it was Waukesha. And actually, it's not something I really wanted to discuss, but the big debate among people right now is, you know, what's termed whataboutisms, right? So individuals say, okay, so this 18-year-old is a racist and he shot 10 people dead and wounded three others. But what about Daryl, I forget his last name, of Waukesha, who had posted on social media encouragements to commit violence against white people and ended up killing close to a dozen and maiming or injuring 63, right?
Daryl Brooks.
And I'm open to being informed. I don't think you can compare crimes and make political statements about them in general. Because one thing we do as criminal practitioners is we look at the person who's accused, we look at the crime, and we try to piece together how this person got to where he is, right? But I think the difference, and I think the best argument against not comparing these two is the issues with racism is when it's directed at individuals who have been disenfranchised for centuries and decades and have suffered as a result of their race. So when we see what I can only call a modern day lynching. It's upsetting and it's grotesque and it's so sad because you say to yourself, these individuals were killed because of the color of their skin and because of the hatred that this kid had. And I know it's not that simple, right? Obviously, I think there's going to be some mental health issues at play because he also threatened to kill his white classmates when he was in high school.
It is, but
the difference, and we shouldn't be playing this game of comparisons because at the end it's two horrific tragedies that should have been prevented. And, you know, whether that prevention was by law enforcement actually policing social media for these kind of red flags, or whether it was to pay attention to these individuals and give them the services that they actually need,
or both,
right? The individuals that were killed in, am I pronouncing it right? Waukesha?
Yes. I think so, but I'm...
I don't know.
The last person...
I'm from Spain. I learned English when I was six. my fallback excuse always. Hadn't, because of their skin color, been disenfranchised and abused and lynched in the past. But with these two shooters, frankly...
I think you make an excellent point, and your phrase that this is a modern day lynching, I think, is poignant. The crime is a byproduct of what we refer to as America's original sin, which is slavery and racism. And I don't think it serves anybody to duck away from the fact that it still exists. It's still out there. It still has ramifications for people, and in this case, deadly ramifications. That said, and I wanted to kind of talk about that. I think it's important for us to chat about that. That said, the political use of these crimes and these motivations, I think, is repulsive. So what this kid did was unbelievably bad, and for the reasons that you very articulately stated, but it's not Tucker Carlson's fault. It's not the Republicans' fault. The knee-jerk reaction by liberal Democrats to blame Republicans and try to make political hay out of this is sickening to me. It really and truly is. The kid is crazy. He's racist. He didn't need Tucker Carlson to become a racist. It's been our original sin forever.
I mean, to me, that
all of it
is just white noise in the background anyway. I mean, but I don't pay attention to it because you look at a case like this, and part of the draw of being a criminal defense lawyer, to me at least, is figuring out what happened, right? Like,
why it happened.
Yeah, and I'm interested in, and that's for mitigation purposes when you know someone's done something and you're trying to put together the pieces and figure out why. How did he get here? How did he become this monster? How were there no signs to the parents, right? Like, so all of that is of interest to me. Aside from the other layer of excitement is when you don't know what happened or if your client did it, right? And I think 5% of our cases are mysteries, and they're probably the most exciting ones. But the vast majority, you know, between the evidence, between your investigation, between your conversations with your client and his family and maybe witnesses and victims or alleged victims, you can kind of figure out what happened. So the mystery is not there. That aspect is not exciting. Right. But once you get an individual, the person that's in the media, you know, whether it's the shooter in Waukesha or the shooter in Buffalo or someone charged with murder or any other kind of violent crime, versus that person in the media versus the person that you meet in a cell, are often two different people.
They are. Well, let me ask this question, defense attorney Lyson Ring. We get a phone call tomorrow morning. This kid is from Broome County, just outside of Binghamton. We've done a lot of work up there. We have some fairly high-profile cases out of Binghamton where the local news media reports on them. We, in some ways, we're better known percent-wise in Broome County than we are on Long Island, or at least as well. And the parents of him call us up tomorrow and say, we really want that team that has done so well with a couple of cases up in the southern tier to represent our son in Buffalo. What do you say?
I'd say, what do you want me to say, equity partner and managing partner? and honestly, I don't think I would take on a second federal death penalty case, which I sense this is going to turn into, without a doubt, without the proper assistance team. These cases, you don't just dabble in, they're for life. We're currently dealing with a matter that started 5 years ago and probably won't be tried for another. You don't get
another
to,
year, not another 5 years.
Yeah, you don't. Right, thank you. or I'm gonna commit sushi. Like, you don't. You know, these aren't cases that you sign up for, unless lightly. Unless you're willing to commit a decade to them.
I was more interested, leaving aside the practical part of it, do you represent a kid like this?
Yeah, I don't think you can be a criminal defense. I don't think you can be an honest criminal defense lawyer and not represent the monsters. You don't do this just to help the innocent. As it's your line, you do this to help people.
Defend the accused, seek mercy for the right. convicted.
But like I always, when people like cocktail party talk, how do you do what you do? What if you know if they're guilty,
but
right?
But we're flipping about that because we deal with it all the time and we've made our peace
like,
with it.
No, but I actually say to people, including prosecutors, I say, you're welcome. And they're like, what do you mean? And I'm like, I help them make the decision to plead guilty and accept your offer that we negotiated and felt was appropriate. You didn't do that on your own. I counseled the client. I said, here's a lay of the land. Here's the evidence. Here's what could happen at trial. Here are the witnesses against you. Here's what a cross-examination is going to look like. And I literally counsel them. If the police didn't have probable cause and got a gun without a search warrant, then guess what? That's not my fault. It's the police's fault.
But it's not.
I get to litigate that because it's a constitutional privacy right and get that gun suppressed. And I do that so that the next innocent person doesn't get unlawfully intruded upon, right? So there has to be, or doesn't have to be, I guess, but there is an adversarial system for a reason. And that reason is when prosecutors are overzealous and they're hiding exculpatory information or going after the wrong man, there's a defense lawyer to stop him, to challenge him, to let the court see what's going on. And frankly, vice versa, right?
And look, this case, we obviously know what happened, but we don't always know what happened. And it can't be that as a defense attorney, we pick and choose the cases that we think the client is innocent and then go full bore there.
Right. It's like
because you don't know. And we could talk about, we won't tonight, but we could talk about case after case after case that we've handled over the years and that I've handled over decades where the initial reaction is, of course he did it. And then we investigate it and find out that, of course, he did not.
Right. And I don't think the Buffalo shooter case is that kind of a case.
It's not. But what kind of case it is, it's not, did he do it or didn't he do it? The ultimate penalty he's going to pay here, which certainly he's going to spend the rest of his life in prison.
Could be
execution. And it may be that when you delve into his life and the reasons why he did it and what happened to him, that the death penalty is inappropriate, even right. if you support the death penalty, even with a death qualified jury. In other words, jurors who say, sure, I'll vote to execute somebody if I think it's appropriate, that even those individuals will decide not to execute him. And one thing I want to mention is Lee Zeldin, the Republican presumptive nominee for governor this year, has come out, and his response to this is to say New York should bring back the death penalty.
It is absolutely ridiculous, and if you're it's absolutely absurd. It's ridiculous. It's expensive. It's not a deterrent. It is not even-handedly used. There are so many reasons against the death penalty. I can't even begin to tell you what a colossal disaster that would be here in New York.
And there's no way, I don't think it would happen. The death penalty, was really what Pataki ran on back in the, I think, 96, I believe, is when he was elected. Or no, 94, because the death penalty was instituted in New York in 1995.
And the irony is you see a case like this and Lee Zeldin says he wants to bring back the death penalty. And the problem with the death penalty, one of the problems, is that it ends up being a racist system where if the victim was white and the perpetrator was black, his chances of getting the death penalty are, I think, at least twice as, maybe four times as high as the individual perpetrator being white. So to cure the very racist shooting of 10 people in Buffalo, we're going to institute a death penalty that's going to perpetuate the issues with racism.
No, absolutely. Look, the other part of this that I wanted to chat about briefly or for a bit is access to guns. We mentioned it a little bit in the other segment that I thought that giving guns to teenagers or selling guns to teenagers, even 18, 19-year-olds, is inappropriate for a variety of reasons. But the other political part of what happens after a shooting like this is people come out and start talking about how we should deny law-abiding, reasonable people from owning guns, and that they want to pull guns off the shelves, institute very restrictive gun control laws, even more restrictive than New York has. Now, think about what we have here. New York has among the most restrictive gun laws in the country, and young Peyton was able to get his hands on enough weapons and armor to do this horrible act. We have a Second Amendment. It's a constitutional right to own firearms. The Supreme Court's going to issue a decision any day now, very shortly, on New York City's gun laws. I think is going to further strengthen gun owners' rights when the decision comes out. And I think it's one of the prices that we pay as a free society, that you get to own guns, people get to drive cars, people can drink alcohol, people can do a whole range of things, that if they misuse the items cause unbelievable harm. And that's horrible when that happens. But the answer is not to take away the implement of the crazy person's harm or the implement of their attack. It's to deal with the person up front, because you're never going to be able to stop people from doing things.
Right. Right. I think my biggest fear with guns is probably suicides, because I think that's the leading cause of gun deaths. I think by 60% or something to that effect. And a friend of mine said, I think suicide is impulsive, right? And I think about people who are reasonable, rational, people with no criminal tendencies or criminal records, who are responsible gun owners, being at home alone in a moment of darkness. You know, a lot of people have increasingly become depressed or have felt increasing sense of isolation, that, you know, one too many drinks in, having a bad bout with depression, the ease with which people can truly commit suicide. And that is really, it's really bad, and it's really a problem, which to me goes back down to America has a mental health crisis like no other country that I can think of. And I wonder why that is. I think that we might not be treating mental illness in the right way. Our lifestyle is wrong. Our reliance on pharmaceuticals and really treating children like guinea pigs with them is wrong. But who knows? I don't have all the answers, and I'm always willing to change my views.
No, we don't have all the answers, but the act itself was horrific. The motivation for the act was in some ways even worse, and made the act much worse. And the response to it from this very divided society is, for the one side, as you put it, a whataboutism, what about this case or what about that case, as if somehow we can gloss over the fact that this person did a horrible thing for horrible reasons. And from the other side is to blame talk show hosts and political parties for it. And then, of course, never let a tragedy go to waste. You can also take up your local gun control arguments about...
Or advocate for the death penalty.
Or advocate for the death penalty.
Marty just texted. He always reminds us this, and it's a good reminder. If the death penalty was on the books in 1998, he says, I would be dead today.
Well, he could be dead. Marty Tankleff, who was convicted of murdering both his parents... could very well, if New York had a death penalty.
Falsely convicted.
Right.
Wrongly convicted.
Wrongly convicted.
And exonerated.
Exactly.
And now a lawyer and doing tons of good for the world and teaching students who we're going to feature next week.
No, not next week. The week after. We'll come in on the 30th. But if the death penalty had been enacted in New York in 1988, which is when his parents were both murdered, it's possible that he could have been sentenced to death. Certainly the political climate... And the legal climate, if you will, was that he absolutely did this and they gave him the maximum sentence he could get at the time, which is 50 to life.
By the way, Marty was how old when he got charged? He was 17.
17. 17. So, 17. He would not have been eligible for the death penalty.
Actually, then he might have. I don't know when the Supreme Court decision came down.
He would not have been eligible for the death penalty, and he would not have been executed, actually.
All right, Marty, you got to stop using that line.
it's a poignant line.
It is.
It was right before right after his 17th birthday, actually.
I'm sure I'm going to get another text now correcting me, but I'll say this. It'd be interesting to see Merrick Garland administration on whether they will seek the death penalty for an 18-year-old who I'm sure has a bunch of mitigation and an administration that says they want to end it.
They want to abolish the federal death penalty, which it's not hard to do, Mr. President. Just stop. Just stop seeking it. And for the cases for which you've announced that you want to seek it, change your mind.
Stop, collaborate, and listen to yourself.
Deauthorize those cases and simply move on. Instead, they're fighting to keep them in somewheres. Next week, Kevin Kieran's going to sit in for us. We have some work to do, and we'll be back on the 30th with more Crime and Justice Radio at linewsradio.com. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you in 2 weeks.
The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station, JVC Broadcasting Management, or its sponsors.